Welcome back to your favorite podcast, Legal Ops Insiders, a podcast about everything related to legal operations aimed at heads of legal, general counsels, legal operations leaders, and everyone interested in improving or enabling legal service delivery. In this episode, we're going to talk about IT security and risk management. We think it's important to discuss IT security and risk management, as many think these ISO certifications are just a tick the box whenever they want to buy, for example, legal tech. However, in reality, it's about risk, trust, and business credibility. We think it's important to discuss this as we're buying more and more tools and not everyone has this knowledge. We hope with this episode to give a bit of insight so everyone who's looking at legal tech has some knowledge about it as well. Willem, I see you smiling. I think you want to kick off with this topic, which is very much familiar to you.
Yeah, for me, this IT security and risk management is one of the things we have always been very keen, thanks to having our specific large type of customers with sensitive information, to have IT security on top of our agenda. But it's, I think, 4 years ago that we started with an ISO 27001 certification, and that is somewhat of an eye-opener to some extent. We also added the 27,017 and 18 certifications that is relates really to software or SaaS vendors who enable their customers to comply with their IT security standards. So it's really a lot of checks and balances that you comply with, and as you comply with it, your customers are able to say, we are in compliance with your customers' IT security standards.
Yeah, and to add that to that, with Legal Manager, we did the same. We provide services, no technology, but services based on technology. We use the technology of the clients. So we also decided in a very early stage, we were only for 2 years in existence, I think, that we needed the ISO certification because we deal with data from clients and we want to do it in the most secure way. And if we won't do that, we will be out of business very soon.
And the interesting thing is we started with ISO 27001 implementation, and it's a very intense process to implement such a standard because basically it's a whole cycle of filling in your all kind of registers, like who owns the key of the office, who has a laptop, what kind of software do we license in, what are key risk types of software that we need to evaluate, where do we really need to check if data are processed correctly, and also to formulate all kind of policies as to require from your employees that they hand in declaration that they have a
of good clean, behavior.
Clean sheet.
What? Of good behavior.
Of good behavior, yeah. These are requirements, but also that you can sort of impose measures on non-compliant behavior by employees, and that formalize that in the employment agreement, that you onboard your employees, that you give awareness training about IT security, how this works out, where do you save your documents, are they in the place where they should be. We have also some rules about naming of documents, that must be consistent because it's easy to create a mess, and we really want to avoid that.
So there are a lot of topics within those certifications. And if I understand correctly, it's for service providers, for legal tech service providers, but also for companies who are working in the field but are processing data. Yeah. Is it also important for companies in themselves to have certain certifications?
Well, it's a decision that each company has to make for themselves. But each company dealing with data can get this certification. So law firms have ISO certifications as well, for example. But the larger the company is, the way of dealing with these topics can be very different. And then ISO might be too strict or not flexible enough if you're a large company. But yeah, it is relevant for any company that deals with data.
And if we talk about that ISO is maybe too strict, I know, Willem, you mentioned policies as well. Are they just screening you if you have certain policies within your company, or they also provide the policy and they screening if you are complying with the policy they give?
I think it's important to take a step back. The ISO 27001 doesn't prescribe any rules or policies, procedures or so.
Okay.
What ISO 27001 is nothing more than you do a thorough risk assessment of your organization. So you first need to define what is our organization. You plan a periodical risk assessment. You do periodical evaluation of whether procedures and policies are properly working, adequately applied, and you adjust them accordingly. Yes. Then it starts with making a risk assessment about where in this organization do we run risks. What happens if someone loses the key of the office? What happens if someone loses the laptop, if the laptop gets stolen? But also, what happens if we release software with a bug in it? Data breach. Now, that is a risk assessment where you identify all kind of risks. And the interesting thing, and that's why I think that every legal department can learn from that, is that the next step after identifying what risks you have is actually that you think of what is the exposure, what is the impact of the risk, what's the likelihood that this risk materializes, and if it materializes, what is then the impact financially, reputation-wise? And what ISO 27001 sort of requires from you is that you think about that you try to make this concrete, and that you try to think of, okay, so what do we believe is a high impact and what do we believe is a low impact? And that relates to frequency. A low frequency, so a low likelihood can be it happens only once in a year or a few.
Yeah. So this structure made me think of a data processing impact assessment, which has the same kind of risk assessment. So for the people listening who are not very familiar with ISO certification, but maybe in the field of privacy, I think this is comparable, where you have this assessment with what is the likelihood of the harm, what is the harm, low risk, high risk, etc.
Exactly. And it really, the ISO standard doesn't even prescribe what method you apply. You need to apply a methodology, and it needs to be methodically structured. It needs to be convincing in terms of, okay, if you apply that method, do you then have your risks treated? Did you mitigate the risks from a high risk, high likelihood down to low likelihood?
And that doesn't make it a paper exercise, because you actually have to show that it works. You have to prove that you do the things that you need to do to manage your risks according to what you plan in your ISO plan, in your information management system.
It was very funny when we started our certification. I think it was 4 years ago or so. I called Jan Willem because I knew that they were certified, and you actually had the same software package based on Confluence, which is very supportive.
Yeah, where it gives structure.
You can buy a sort of package which gives you the base structure, and then what you do is...
And even the base policies. So even the base policies are already there, and you just have to amend them to your own organization, basically.
You have to write out, how do we apply this?
Yes.
So if we do software development, what do the programmers do? How do we release software versions to our customers? We have a release policy, and we thought that the release policy in our case would be a critical element to add. There was no foreseen release policy, but we have customers who really want to do their own testing, and we have a policy, for example, that we first release to customers where, after the testing, of course, and after the acceptance testing that we do, and of course after the programmers do their testing, and that the programmers do their technical testing and the security and etc. testing, then we release first to a circle of customers with whom we are in a sort of day-to-day contact, so that we likely find the bugs, or that if a bug is found, it is not alarm phase one when it's discovered, but that we are on top of it and can manage that.
Yeah.
And that, in the essence, is what the whole ISO 27001 is about, that you are able to manage the risks as they materialize, and you should accept that this can happen. And then you have a cycle where you monitor all the risks every year or every half a year or even more frequent, where in the monitoring you go through then the structure, how it is set up, is you have your risks identified, you have determined the likelihood or the impact to be low, of course, and to mitigate that risk, you have a certain controls in place. Those controls are actually defined in the ISO standard. So the ISO 27001 gives, I think, 95 controls, as this is called. The ISO 27017 has another 200 of controls, because that's about your software being up to date, user management, encryption, and what have you. It goes to your customer side, and it goes to how you insource certain elements of the software that you provide to your customers. The 27018 is rather your, what you can say, it's not called that way, but you could say the GDPR compliance. So personal information, how do you deal with that, and do you have all the checks and balances in place? Now, when you have made that assessment per risk, you say we need this control to be reviewed every quarter or to be reviewed every month or every year. And the control has a certain implementation, how you implement it in your organization. And it identifies which procedures and policies are to be followed. If you hire a new employee, then there's an onboarding procedure to follow where you onboard your employee.
Yeah, and that reminds me, very interesting, humans are the biggest risk. It's not so much the IT, it's the humans that use it. How do you manage your passwords, for example? Do you change your password regularly, yes or no? What is the policy for that? Does everybody know what the policy is? And do people follow that?
I think it's simple. Critical to, I mean, of course, in the onboarding, there are two big elements here in the onboarding. The one is an awareness training.
Yep.
Everyone who starts working in Wiiqi gets an awareness training where they are told and explained what their own responsibility is regarding IT security and information security management system, as we have that.
Yeah. But just an awareness training is not enough, because you should people actually confront with what they are doing and see if they are doing what you require from them. Otherwise, you still have nothing. Then you did awareness training and then it stops. That's not enough.
And prohibit people from doing. I mean, we have laptops where you can't put an USB stick in and export any documents or install any programs on your laptop. That's not possible unless you have the privilege or unless this is done by the administrator.
And this sounds all very secure. And this is really from an insider's perspective. Do you also share this, let's say, audit results with the partners you work with or the policies you have? Or do you demonstrate the partners you contract what kind of security you have in place?
That's a good question. It touches upon another element of the information security management system, which is your supplier's policy or the management of your suppliers. What we do is we differentiate for mission-critical suppliers to key operational suppliers and a sort of the rest of the suppliers. And they are treated differently, and we apply different standards to them. Key mission-critical suppliers are obviously Microsoft for SharePoint and Office and what have you related to that. If we can't get access to our inboxes or to our documents, then that's mission critical for us, impacting immediately our customers. Mission critical is, of course, in our case, the data center. Now, for the data center, the standard is higher than simple ISO 27001 certification. ISO 27001 certification, as we are talking about it, is you have your procedures and policies in place and you should follow them. And if that's happening, then everything should be okay. Now, that is not enough for a data center. For a data center, it must be a sort of, at every minute of the day, there must be compliance with this, and the data center has to prove that it is doing that. And of course, the data center has another risk assessment. They provide an infrastructure. They provide a dedicated hosting environment for us, for the portals of our customers. They provide patches and service level agreements, monitoring of our infrastructure and updating and keeping everything safe. And they have a fallback structure of when the electricity falls out. When there is a fire in the data center, then within 4 seconds, it's very impressive to see that, within 4 seconds they can have a sports hall put the fire down, and it's really possible. They do our backups. So what we do at least once a year, but sometimes more often, is a backup testing. They do their backup testing as well as parts of the services. It results for them in what is called SOC 2 assurances. The SOC 2 assurances means they have analyzed their whole provision of services together with an auditor. They have described that whole servicing that they do towards us in a type 1 report. That is what an auditor signs off on and says, this looks really like a reliable, convincing report, type 1, and it's a ESA E3401 type 1 report. And then the process starts for a true SOC 2 assurances, which means type 2, that they do this constant audit. They have to hand over to the auditor full data integrity, uncompromised audit trail of data, that nothing has been interrupted and what have you. And then an auditor signs off of that, and then you have what is called a SOC 2 report, and that is renewed every year.
You have a lot of knowledge about this topic, Willem. And if I summarize, I think that each ISO standard you just mentioned, the information security, the GDPR one, address a different type of risk. So security, quality, safety, but they all share a common DNA, a certain structure of processes, risk-based thinking, continuous improvement. But for the listeners and everyone involved in legal operations, what do you think is the most important? So why should companies look at a ISO-certified legal tech supplier from your perspective?
It's actually an ISO certification proves that you have a comprehensive set of policies in place that presumably, and you need to look into the scope as it is written on the certificate, what the scope of the certified operations is. In our case, everything is covered by our ISO certification, so including the data center. We rely, of course, in our promise to our customers, or the promise in the certificate that the data center is fine. We rely on their ISO certification plus their SOC 2 assurances. And we do the same with our programmers. Our programmers are also ISO 27001 certified, so we rely on them monitoring their system. If we hire legal manager services for servicing our customers, where Jan Willem would not be the first, financially or legally, the first party to deal with but us, then we rely on their ISO certification for promising our customers that we have our way of working, our procedures, what we do and don't do, so our policies are all in place.
So if I understand correctly, the ISO certification is also easy way to audit the whole supply chain of the companies who are behind the legal tech tool.
The trick is that you look into what is the scope of your certification. Does it include your suppliers, for example? Or if a customer hires, we agree also for some support services, where actually these support services are delivered by Willem and his team, then this is covered in the scope of our certification. Of course, Jan Willem doesn't guarantee our quality of services in the scope of their ISO certification, but he would rely on that on ours, for example.
Yeah, and maybe it's nice to mention there is also an ISO standard now for AI. It's called ISO 42001-2023. It's the first international standard for an artificial intelligence management system. So also good to think about if you start using AI, within your organization, that also there, this topic is really important.
Yeah, you will need to look into that yourself, because generally speaking, the ISO organization is a United Nations organization, yeah. Or affiliated at least, based in Geneva. They also have an ISO standard for how to abbreviate country names, yeah. in two letters, okay. or in three letters. Absolutely. The Netherlands NL, yeah. or in three letters is NED. That's also an ISO standard.
Yeah.
And likewise, you have an ISO standard for all kind of purposes that are just for reference purposes.
Yes.
But indeed, and AI is very early age, the process of defining an ISO standard and revising it is not a cycle that they do every year. So as this standard is pretty new, you will probably see that many things will come into the future. One remark, if we talk about various standards, an NIS2 standard, for example, is somewhat of the public anchored in yep. European regulations, public anchored, modeled to the ISO 27001 standard.
And DORA is the same.
It really requires, and it follows the same structure of yep. thinking, where you have, first you define your organization. Who's authorized here? Who's the security officer? Do you have pen testing? Do you have a change manager? And what have you? Do you have your management reviews periodically? Put your system and the context in place. Put your registers in place. Then evaluate risks. Then have a cycle of periodical review and monitoring and auditing, of course. And then ending with management of non-conformities and opportunities of improvement, as this is called. So where you have your incident management process and your change management process. And change management is then really the technical changes that you, procedures that you follow if you introduce something.
Yeah, and it's good that you mention other frameworks or certifications, because is there a best in class? Can we say ISO certifications are best, or they're just a different certification?
It's a different structure for assessing the same, I would say. In the end, it all boils down, again, to your risk management methodology that you apply and how you treat the risks that you identify in your risk management, and that translates into your policies, procedures. Now, and here is could be a question, what is the role of legal counsel and why should legal counsel be aware of this? Well, as a legal counsel, you are the guard of processes being applied correctly across the organization. So you better be aware of how those processes are there, how the procedures, whether they are followed. And that is also a thing that I found. If I talk to security officers, yes, thanks to the certification, thanks specifically also to the ISO 27017 certification, which relates to the technical aspects, we need to answer only few questions. And we have online toolings permanently scanning the We Agree online visibility, if you wish, on security scorecard. That's an online tooling. And it gives you a scoring rate. And if the scoring is high, it should be above 80% or 80 out of 100, we have 98.3% at this moment, if I'm correct. So that's a super high scoring, and that's thanks to a customer that we had who did a very thorough assessment of everything. So we have this all in place. Now, if you talk to a security officer about how you implement certain processes and policies, it's very interesting to hear how different a security officer looks at all that. Security officers, they are not typically lawyers. They're typically people from engineers from the business with some level, a quality of autism maybe, who have a good eye for detail,
yeah.
and who really see things going wrong because they have a sort of systematical way of thinking and observing things, which is a high quality.
But isn't it the CISO or security department who is responsible for checking if an organization is ISO certified?
One of the first things that we start with in our awareness training is that security is in the hands of everyone.
Yeah.
It's really those who enter WeAgree are asked explicitly to to contribute to an ongoing improvement of our IT security and to comply with everything. Of course, it's a half a year or more of working on implementing this, and really this goes into very deep detail. So there's also some subsequent monitoring and awareness updating necessary. But I think if you talk to an IT, to a security officer, they have very deep insights. Now, that is one element, monitoring or guarding compliance with processes and policies, where a lawyer can learn from security, IT security department. And another thing which I really think is something that I haven't seen with legal counsel very often or even rarely, is their methodological way of assessing risks. Sitting together with the securities officer and do this likelihood assessment and do this impact assessment. Quantify this.
I think this is used more often nowadays.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's worthwhile. But I've also spoken to security officers in a meeting with legal counsel where they were talking about how things work and that I was like, this sounds like extremely non-compliant. An extreme non-conformity, that files were saved on local drives. That's absolutely something that you wonder where security...
Well, and this is also why it's so relevant also for lawyers. If you want to write good contracts, you have to be very aware about this type of risks and how you deal with it in your contract. And that means that you need to understand better how it works, what a CISO does, and what he is talking about.
And maybe if someone among our listeners thinks, okay, I need to have a ISO certification as well. Can you give a bit of information about how this process works and where you need to start?
Well, it helps a lot. I think nowadays you would really take a tooling like Instant 27001, which is written by a Dutch person who was had a very key role in the European IT security platforms and discussion groups many, many years ago.
So there are IT tools, let's say third-party tools, will help you with structure, administration, application for a certain ISO certification.
Yeah, they give you a full set of pre-written policies and procedures, which are just standard. I mean, it doesn't need to be rocket science as long as you apply a procedure.
Right.
But when you come to certification, the auditor, first of all, it will be an internal auditor. And then when the internal auditor has found their non-conformities and opportunities for improvement, you would adopt those and you would then go into certification audit initially. And then every year you have, again, this internal auditor and then the external auditor to audit the whole information security management system. Yes, you if you take this off-the-shelf available solutions, you would start going through all those. First of all, you would start with assessing all your risks. And you probably get a predefined package of risks that apply to every organization. Yep. You lose the key of the offices, then that has some impact. I can't just think of another.
But this sounds as a costly process as well. You have to buy a tool. There's a lot of time involved. Is it accessible for everyone, also if you're a small tech provider or service provider?
I think so. I mean, the package is a sort of, you buy it once and you have it on Confluence. And Confluence, and in our case, it has a free license for organizations with less than 10 employees or so. So you buy the package once and you go through it all together. Part of it is also then Jira, which is also part of the Atlassian, the owner of Confluence. And Jira connects to it. So you have your task Kanban, which with all the tasks that you periodically have in connection with your IT security management system. So yes, absolutely. And what is somewhat of a costly affair is, yeah, you have your external auditor.
Audits, yeah.
They are required to spend, depending on the size of your organization and the scope of your the type of business, I think. And there's a few also ISO-defined parameters that define the scope of the internal audit and also define the scope of the external audit. And depending on those size of company, etc., they must use 2 full days on your audit, or they must use 5 days on your audit. And of course, with smaller companies, that is a 2 days audit time. they must spend that. So they can't sort of budget on it. Yeah, and then they have a sort of fee that they quote for their audit.
And these auditors are working for, can reach out.
I'm not 100% sure if internal auditors are required to be certified. We think we work with an internal auditor who has all the qualifications in place. I'm not sure if that's a requirement, but for the external audit, it certainly is. And it goes even further. The external auditor must have certification by the supervisory authority, which is on national level, who can double check whether they did their auditing work well.
Yeah, and there are simply audit firms where you hire these auditors that help you to do the audit.
In the Netherlands, I think there's 11 or 12 external audit firms.
Yes.
Only.
Okay. And that brings us to, I think, the last question. And if I understand correctly, it is accessible for everyone to become ISO certified, depending on which certification you need. But then the question which remains is, are you future-proof as a legal tech or legal service provider without such a certification? What do you think?
No, I don't think so. But I also see with the clients we work for, they just require you not to have an ISO certificate, but to show how you deal with the risks on data, on their data, the data you use. And an easy way to do it is through such a certificate, because you just show the certificate and say, okay, then I don't have to check it anymore. Otherwise,
speeds up the security process.
Absolutely.
Oh, significantly. Yeah. We were certified only 4 years ago or so, 3.5 years ago or so. And before that, we had our things sort of quite well in place. I mean, it's really with lots of room of improvement, which we actually did when we did the certification. But given the customers that we have, like Thales, launching customers, ASML, those are really corporates with really strict standards. We also had a U.S. very, very large corporate. We lost them at the start of COVID, unfortunately. But they had a 5-go, no-go staged IT security assessment applied to it. And that was, for us, a 9-month process of, first you get a questionnaire of 200 questions. And they all need to be sort of in order. And if they are not in order, then you get either more detailed questions, or you get tooling to fix them, or you have to fix them anyhow. And they were very mature in helping their suppliers to meet their IT security standards. It's very fascinating that large corporates actually provide this support proactively to the suppliers they want to work with. And that's, of course, if you want to work with startups, can't compromise on your IT security standards or your levels, but you can help those startups getting there. And we had sort of 5 stages of go, no-go decisions, and eventually hundreds of IT security questions. And it went to the detail of, you have your encryption key. The key is the certificate for encryption. This key is generated by a software solution. Is that software solution that your data center, or you if you use it, and then in that case, each that software solution, has it changed the password at first use, and has it changed the username at first use or not?
How nice that we have AI now, which can help filling in these forms based on your policies.
Still, you have to look into how it works. And so I agree with Jan Willem's remark. Should you need an ISO 27001 and probably 27017 and 18 certification? Yes, because it proves that you comply to the higher level of we do all our processes. Before we end, I wanted to discuss one specific topic, which is also a sort of a hot element and a key part in IT security, you will agree with that, which is pen testing of your software. A pen test is a penetration testing that you would do on your own software, or that a third party will do on your software.
Well, not only just also on your network. So each company has a Wi-Fi network, and that should be tested if it's safe or that others can access it from outside.
Yeah, that's also a way of pen testing. Probably that's an easy one, because that's also something that you would certainly want to be able to do with standard tooling before pen testing it goes further. Because pen testing, of course, pen testing is an ethical hacker, so a professional who knows what he or she is doing, tries to break in your software and break through.
Yep.
And this is another thing. At earlier stages of pen testing, we needed to warn our data center, and then you get from the data center a sort of full-fledged indemnification for if anything happens, then you will be liable, and we may only do the pen test at a certain time window that we need to announce in advance. Now, that is all fine, of course, and we do that if also the network, the infrastructure that affects the data center is affected by the pen testing. But the pen testing is rather into trying the ethical hacker to try to get in. And then you see that there are three levels of pen testing. You have so-called black box, gray box, and white box. It's a sort of casual way of describing how to do because it's not sharp aligned. The idea behind black box is you give a password and account name to the hacker and he just tries to break in. Or she just tries to, can I get into the software and can I break through? Can I get data that I should not be able to get out of the database with some commands, which is called injection, SQL injection if you wish. And then there's a sort of worldwide list of vulnerabilities, and that list is every year sort of updated. That's OWASP list, top 10. SQL injection is typically one of the top ones that you want that you don't want to have, but a pen tester will try to see if they can find that you're non-compliant with them. Now, why black box testing is you get an account and a hacker just goes in and try to find their way through it to the data. The second gray box is a more educated way where you define, we want you to do testing, and it's the same testing, of course, but you educate the hacker more into this is what the functionalities are, and this is where you might be able to break in or not. Please try. And then you also have a what's called white box pen testing, where the hacker or the pen tester actually has really more detail of how your software works and really goes after everything. And then there are dozens and dozens of standard checks that are also conducted by hack tooling or pen testing tooling. And we, for example, have a working on establishing a mature pen testing solution that has standard testing on the application, and each time that we develop new functionalities, we add that to the testing tooling. And then you get a report with, similar to your risk assessment, high priority risk, medium priority risks, and low priority risks that you need to solve or that you need to fix if a breakthrough was achieved. It's very healthy to have this testing. It's also a relief if you have had the first test round.
But these testings are not part of a certification process.
No.
Okay.
No. So you define in your ISO certification that, and of course, an auditor will criticize you on your software provider. So, what happens if your customer experiences a data breach by a hacker? So that is a risk that the auditor will ask you to justify why that risk is not identified in your risk. And in your risk treatment, you provide for a pen testing policy on your code with some frequency. And the scope of pen testing, I mean, we saw it with a recertification that the auditor asked us, and so what is the scope of the pen testing?
And bigger corporations often ask for example, a yearly report of a pen test or audit next to a certain ISO certification.
Yeah, that can be. Basically, what they would want to see is it's not that important that there was a big vulnerability identified in such a pen test. What is important is that you treat it well.
Yeah, and that's how do you deal with it?
And yes. I think that is a good summary of the message of this episode as well, that incidents can happen, but certain ISO certification or other certifications give you the trust that procedures are in place to treat them well, correct, if I summarize correctly.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. It gives you, having been tested against the most severe testing methods, having experienced incidents gave you opportunities to learn and improve. And that is basically the aim of an ISO 27001 certification, information security management system, is that you continue to improve and that there are processes in place that are followed to actually improve.
I think a lot of information in this episode. I hope you all learned from it. It's an insight in an interesting topic, which is very important and also a ground from, or the starting ground for, a lot of projects which are related to legal operations and buying legal tech, etc. So I hope it was insightful, and we hope to see you at the next episode. Thank you for listening.